And hello and welcome to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus and on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing. We have a wonderful show today. We have Michelle Hunnivan and Bernadette Murphy with us. Bernadette Murphy is a literary critic for the Los Angeles Times who has written about life, literature, and art for Ms. Magazine, San Francisco Chronicle, LA Weekly, Newsday, LA Times Magazine, and others. Her best-selling book, Zen and the Art of Knitting, was published in 2002 by Adams Media Corporation, and it examined the metaphysics of knitting, and her anthology, The Knitter's Gift, published in October 2004, gathered the tales of knitters from around the nation and across the world. Bernadette teaches creative writing for the MFA program at Antioch University, Los Angeles, and the UCLA Extension Writers Program. She lives in Glendale with her three school-aged children and her husband, John. Michelle Hunnivan's first novel, Round Rock, was published in 1997 by Knopf. It was the New York Times Notable Book of the Year, one of the LA Times Best 100 Books of the Year, and a finalist for the LA Times First Fiction Award. Her second novel, Jamesland, was published in 2003 by Knopf. It was also a New York Times Notable Book and a Book Sense Pick, a finalist for the LA Times Fiction Prize, and a winner of the Southern California Booksellers Award for Fiction. Michelle received a Whiting Award for Fiction in 2002. She's taught at USC, UCSB, and in the Antioch MFA program, where she met Bernadette. In 2001, she bought a home in the town she grew up in, Altadena, California, where she lives with her new husband and is at work on her next novel. Bernadette and Michelle are here to talk about their individual work as well as their new book that they've co-authored, The Dow Girl's Guide to Real Estate, published by Bloomsbury. Hi there.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having us.
Great. And you can hear each other okay?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Excellent. Perfect. It's great to have you on, and I love doing shows with two guests at once. It can be interesting in many ways, but it's great that you're both here with this new book of yours, The Dow Gal's Guide to Real Estate, Six Modern Women Discover the Ancient Art of Finding, Owning, and Making a Home. Will you talk about how this book came about? Bernadette, do you want to start?
Sure, I'd love to. Michelle and I belong to a group of women that started getting together about 7 years ago, and we would meet on Tuesday nights to read the Tao Te Ching, which is an ancient spiritual text. And we would read a little section of it and write about how that applied in our life, and then share with each other what we had written. And over the 6 years that we were meeting as a group, every single woman in the group struggled with the issue of buying, owning, or losing a home. And that was a theme that kept coming up. And so, and we found that the lessons we were learning from the Tao Te Ching and from each other empowered each of us to walk our individual paths of a home ownership. So we decided to pull together the stories of all six women and how we maneuvered our way through those years in order to sort of give a guidebook to other people who might be struggling with similar issues.
Interesting. What's your take on all that, Michelle?
Well, Bernadette said it very well. I had never thought I could ever buy a home, and I found so much information, just hardcore information and also support in the group, that I thought if we could just bottle it and give it to other women who were sort of home buying phobic, that it would really help them. I had talked to a woman at a party, a woman very similar to myself, a freelance writer, very good writer, very smart woman who'd been renting for years, and I said that she should buy a home because I had bought one and it made me happy, and she was a little depressed, and she said, well, doesn't it take $1 million? And that was the woman that I thought needed this book. She needed to know the reality of home buying because she just simply didn't. And I felt that it would be a service to her and to other women who are intimidated by all the financial and technical details.
Hmm. Well, the book is interesting in that it you know, there's a lot of books out there on, you know, buying real estate, investing in real estate, and it seems that most of them, if not all of them, are pretty much a snore as far as I'm concerned. You know, I have no interest in reading about this stuff. Of course, I am interested in buying a house, a home at some point, like 10 years ago. But and so this book, it's so fun to read because not only am I learning things, but it's also interesting, you know, that I love your are they quotes from the I Ching or Lao Tzu?
From the Tao Te Ching.
Sure.
The Stephen Mitchell translation.
Okay. And I mean, I just love that format where you start with a few lines, something meant to be inspirational, and then you go into your, you know, just the stuff about how to do it. But your writing is interesting and fun to read as opposed to just that dry stuff out there.
Well, thank you. What we were trying to do is make the stories that we had to tell, which are Michelle's story, my story, and the story of the four other women who belong to this group, bring you into the stories as if you were at one of the meetings with us, so that it becomes sort of a little bit gossipy, a little bit fun, overhearing interesting details about other people's lives, so that it doesn't read like a how-to book. You learn how-to information, but that's almost sort of after the fact. It's more learning how people do this. How do you navigate the emotional territory of buying a home? Most of us have grown up where our fathers were the ones in our families of origin who did any sort of real estate purchases. We didn't have mothers or other women to look up to on how to do this, so we learned from each other. And the stories of how we each sort of struggled and fell down and made a mess of things and then figured out how to do it became entertaining and interesting.
How did you decide to work together in terms of, you know, collaborating? Who did what?
Oh, who did what? You want to answer that, Michelle?
Well, I think I came up with the initial idea, but Bernadette was an easy sell. I didn't want to write the book by myself, and Bernadette is one of the hardest workers I know. So if anybody ever wants to write a book with somebody, I can't recommend Bernadette more highly. She's the only person I know whose idea of meeting a deadline is to get something done like 4 days ahead of time. She was a joy to work with, and she just did the lion's share of the reporting. And I was just completely brilliant in asking her to write it with me. That's all I can say.
Gee, well,
that's a high praise. Thank you, Michelle.
I don't know if she'll thank you later when she starts getting the calls and emails from people who want her to help with their book.
And, I mean, we were the only two writers in the group. The other women, who all have fascinating stories, have very interesting and diverse lives from ours. One of the women is a three-time Olympian. One woman is a real high-powered district attorney prosecuting top-notch, you know, murder cases in downtown L.A. One is a financial analyst. I mean, they were all very different, but none of them were writers. So the longer we met, the more Michelle and I kept talking about this would be something interesting to translate into a book. And neither one of us wanted to do it alone. The thought of undertaking a book by yourself is a huge thing, and the idea that we could share it made the project seem doable to us.
We also had a very enthusiastic agent who said she wanted to read the book even before it was written because she wanted to buy a home.
Yeah.
Now, did you have the same agent? I mean, do you have the same agent for your other projects?
No, Bernadette's agent was a friend of mine, Bonnie Nadel. I have a separate agent for my fiction in New York, but Bonnie was kind enough. My fiction agent wasn't interested in taking on the project, and Bonnie was, so we've been very happy with her.
And then did you go the route of book proposal and all of that? Or
yes.
Uh-huh. So then which chapters did you write for the proposal? Did you start at the beginning and actually submit those chapters?
I think that's right, isn't it, Bernadette?
Well, Michelle, what we did is we each wrote a chapter. Mm-hmm. Michelle wrote what became the first chapter of the book, and I wrote what became the penultimate chapter of the book, but we didn't know at the time that that's where they were going to fall in the book. She wrote about her experience of buying a home, believing that she had no business buying a home. And I wrote about my experience of losing a home to foreclosure, mm-hmm. which is what happened before I came and joined the Dow Group, and how that changed my self-esteem and all these different aspects of understanding my own identity, yet also gave me great joy. So we both wrote those things. We wrote a introduction and a sort of generic proposal of what the rest of the book would cover, explaining some of what the other women's stories were.
And then in terms of keeping the tone and style consistent,
mm-hmm.
would you edit each other? How would that go?
We would edit each other. Bernadette did a lot of the reporting. She talked a lot to the other women, and then I would go over it and massage it, and then she would go over it and massage it. And I think it got, and we also had a really terrific editor at the end who kind of helped us. This book was sort of fast, so the editor really, she had a photographic memory, and she could move huge blocks of type around in her head like a computer.
Yeah.
And so between the three of us, we massaged it into what we hope is a fairly uniform voice.
And it's interesting, when we go back and read different sections of it, there's parts where I can't tell if I wrote it or Michelle wrote it, that we each added bits here and there, and it ended up with a blended voice because of that.
Exactly. I completely agree.
Interesting. You're listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI in Irvine. I am talking with Bernadette Murphy and Michelle Hanivan, authors of The Dow Gal's Guide to Real Estate, Six Modern Women Discover the Ancient Art of Finding, Owning, and Making a Home, published by Bloomsbury. Would you like to read from it?
Sure.
Okay.
This is Michelle, and I'm going to read just a paragraph of Chapter 1, which is called Dow Gal Qualifies for Home Ownership. And the Dow quote we use is, "The Tao doesn't take sides. It gives birth to both good and evil. The Master doesn't take sides. She welcomes both saints and sinners. I never dreamed I could buy a house. I was prejudiced against the whole idea. I began my career as a freelance writer with no savings and an unsteady source of income. Over time, I began to make a decent living, but my income was still unpredictable, arriving as it did in big bursts and small bits. Even when I inherited enough for a small down payment, I was sure that nobody would trust me with a mortgage, though what exactly a mortgage entailed, I couldn't quite tell you. My reluctance to buy a house wasn't just about money. I was a single woman living alone. Houses were what couples bought, couples who planned to have children. My sister, at a time when she was also single, once asked my father for advice and help in buying a flat in London where she lived. My father made part of his living carrying second mortgages. He advised her against buying a flat. Single women are bad risks, he explained, and refused her a loan. My sister, I should point out, was also self-employed, but incredibly disciplined and frugal. She was and is so frugal, in fact, she makes car payments into a savings account and only buys a new car when she has the cash in hand. This was a person my father labeled a bad risk. But he was our father, and he knew about mortgages, and for a while at least, we couldn't help but take his opinion to heart."
Thank you. If you just tuned in, that was Michelle Hanivan reading from The Dow Gal's Guide to Real Estate. How was it? I mean, you've written novels, Michelle, and I guess I primarily think of you as a fiction writer. How was it to then go into a nonfiction project?
Well, the whole time I was writing novels, I was a restaurant critic, and I did journalism for the LA Times and the LA Weekly. But this kind of level of personal journalism, I didn't do quite as much for the newspapers and magazines I wrote for. This is really the most probably intimate I've been in book form. So I didn't feel strange until the book has actually been published.
And why is that?
Well, I think for the obvious reasons that, you know, strangers will read it.
Uh-huh.
And although there's nothing I'm ashamed of, it is revealing. And I do that happily in the hope that it gives courage to other women to buy a house. But at the same time, I find myself slightly more nervous nervous in a different way than with a novel. In a novel, you're mostly concerned with sort of the critics. And in this case, I'm just mostly concerned with self-revelation.
Interesting. Okay. Lately there has been an special amount of talk really regarding, you know, nonfiction versus fiction and which is which. Although your book, The Tao Gal's Guide, isn't a memoir, it's interesting. It's true. I mean, it's nonfiction. So how much do you say? How much do you put yourself in it? Whereas in fiction, even if you're totally in it, you can disguise.
Yes.
In so many ways.
Yeah, it was a trick to find a good, comfortable level of disclosure.
Interesting. You are listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm talking with Bernadette Murphy and Michelle Hunnivan, author of The Tao Gal's Guide to Real Estate. Were there any surprises along the way in writing this book? Either things you found out that you had no idea about in terms of buying a home or maybe things that the project revealed to you?
Yeah, there were surprises from my aspect. The narrative thread of my part of the story is we start the story with me wanting to re-enter the home buying market, having lost previously with the previous boom. We had bought in 89 and then lost more than 50% of the value on our home, and it had been just a nightmare and had lost that home. So when the story begins, I'm hoping to re-enter the home buying market. And the goal in writing the book on some level was that by the time we were done writing the book, I should have bought a home. And it didn't pan out that way. The way the market took off, the way factors came into play, that the way the story actually turned out was different than what we had hoped it would be. Yet it works very well that way, and it was a statement sort of on how insane the market has become in the Los Angeles area and how many people are in similar situations to the one I find myself in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bernadette did this charming thing when she was in the process of writing the book. She would interview people for information that she dearly wanted for herself under the guise of being a journalist, that she was writing this book. So she had that blind to hide behind. And I remember probably the biggest surprise was when the woman did her credit score and found out that even with this foreclosure some 6 or 7 years later, Bernadette had like this platinum, you know, credit score.
Yeah, it was funny because I went in literally shaking in my boots to meet with a mortgage broker, ready to be utterly shamed in the process and find out that, you know, I could have gone out and bought whatever I wanted, basically. And it's incredibly surprising and made for good narrative tension in the piece because I didn't know that was going to happen. And as I would, like, talk to realtors and different people, I could always go into it, well, even if it turned out horrible for me, it's grist for the mill. And it gave me the courage to go and ask questions that I wouldn't have asked. I would have been too frightened to ask if it had been just for myself.
Interesting. You know, do you have people asking you for advice now? You know, I want to buy a house, and
so far the book only came out last week, so we haven't had much of that yet. But what I am finding is people wanting to tell me their home buying stories and debacles. Mm-hmm. The few people I know that have read it already are volunteering. Well, let me tell you about the time, and it is a story that is based in story and narrative. So you get these six women's stories more than you get sort of any how-to information. And by getting the stories, I think it calls forth in the reader their own stories. What has stopped them from entering the market? What is the emotional territory they feel they're treading when they look into this? Has it worked out well for them in the past? Why have they or haven't they explored this option?
Well, I think that really is, I think, what makes the book so interesting is that it is stories. They are stories, and you know, we're given things to think about in terms of, you know, checklists and how we should think about buying a house and what do we want and all of this. But But that sort of, those checklists at the end of chapters or embedded within chapters are pretty much the only real sort of element that you might find in a how-to book.
Right. Our hope was that maybe the first time someone reads this book, they just read the stories and get caught up in the possibility that maybe they can enter the market. And that maybe the second time they look at the book, they might want to start looking at some of the checklists or worksheets that are there to have the tools on how to go forward now. But that the main idea was to sort of get them fired up that they might be able to do this. If we could do this, this motley group of women that were gathering that had all kinds of imperfections in how we dealt with money and large decisions like that, if we could do this, then just about anyone could.
Mm. Yeah, we wanted the stories to educate without educating, so that you could read these stories and at the end have a really good idea what a mortgage was, what escrow was, what inspections were and entailed, without having to read any of those dull, boring fact sheets.
And they are dull and boring.
I know. When we were just doing a glossary, our eyes were getting crossed.
Oh, it's so true. Okay, we're going to take a short break and be back with Michelle and Bernadette. Before we take a break, though, you two are appearing somewhere later tonight, yes?
Yes.
We're at Vroman's in Pasadena at 7 p.m.
And they'll be talking and signing books. So if you're anywhere near Pasadena or if you're in Orange County, get in your car now and tune in to 88.9 FM so you can continue listening. And we will be right back with more Michelle and Bernadette. Don't go away.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
And you don't hear none of those stations playing them. Ask why. In fact, where are those stations today? Somebody better ask somebody that. The people that's most affected by this war.
From animal rights and the anti-war movement to civil disobedience and culture jamming, Justice or Just Us examines law, equality, public policy, and social activism. Tune in Thursdays 8 to 9 a.m. on KUCI in Irvine and KUCI.org.
Weekly Signals, every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Join me, Mike Casper, and Nathan Callahan for the best in reality-based radio. That's Weekly Signals. Check out the website at weeklysignals.com.
Station 2. Writers on Writing, hosted by Barbara DeMarco, Barrett on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on KUCI FM in Irvine. Bye-bye.
Yee-haw! The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to KUCI.org.
And we are back with Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and we are here with Michelle Hunnevin and Bernadette Murphy. Hello again.
Hi.
Hello, Barbara.
Let's talk a little bit about each of your own work, and then we're going to get back to the Dow Gal's Guide to Real Estate once again. Since you spoke a little bit, Michelle, about fiction, maybe let's talk a little bit more in terms of fiction and sort of where it comes from. Your novels Round Rock and James Land, can you talk about sort of the genesis of those books? James Land is the most recent, yes?
Yes.
Okay, maybe we can start there. And I mean, because fiction, you know, for some writers, you know, making it all up is daunting. And for others, they can't imagine writing something that would be nonfiction or even based on their own life. I mean, I suppose for every writer, there's another way of doing it. Will you talk about your approach to fiction?
Well, I was trained as a fiction writer. I have an MFA from the University of Iowa, and I always loved novels so much as a child that there wasn't much doubt as to what I wanted to do as an adult. The ideas for both of my novels were really aggregates of different interests. And James Land in particular, I actually had a dream that starts James Land as an introduction, in which I dreamt that a deer came into my house. And I was undergoing a lot of dream analysis at that time, and I thought, well, this is such a rich dream because you could explore it almost forever. And so I decided to have a character who had that dream, a character who is very unhappy, whose life was in extremis, and she has the dream, and she kind of unpacks it. She tries to find out what deer symbolize, what deer mean to her, so that by the end of the novel, my goal was that even though she didn't really have an answer, her whole life was completely different. And that was the basic idea for James Land. But then I was also completely obsessed with William James at the time. So I made that character, the great-great-granddaughter of William James. And so I just began to pile one thing on top of another.
Did you have any sort of plot or outline?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, I didn't sit down and systematically outline the book, but there were certain places I wanted to get to. Sometimes a plot point, sometimes an image.
Yeah, interesting. An image. That's interesting.
Well, it starts with that image of the deer in the dining room.
Right. And then her grandmother.
Yes, and then, yes, her great-aunt, actually.
Her great-aunt, yes.
And she never knows if you know, how much reality was actually involved. Did a deer actually come in, or was it some sort of unconscious eruption? She never solves that, but that becomes beside the point.
What about Round Rock?
Round Rock was actually born in a short story that I wrote with a friend, oddly enough, when I was in college. And it was a short story in which a woman, her trailer house burns down, and she goes to find her boyfriend to move in with him. And she can't find him. She can only find his fat, awful boss. But in the end of the story, she finds her boyfriend, and they move in together. And my writing teacher said, A, this is not a short story, it's a novel, and B, wouldn't it be much more interesting if she ended up with the fat boss? And so I began to think about how that could be possible, and the boss began to change into my head, and he became this character who I'm still in love with named Red Ray, who ran a drunk farm and is an extremely charismatic person, and who this character whose trailer burns down eventually marries.
So again, did you know a whole lot about the book, where you were headed, plot points, even the ending before you began, or is that the sort of thing that unfolds as you write? I mean, you basically had a beginning, you had the characters you wanted to begin with, and then a place you're heading for?
Yes, absolutely. I always sort of have my last line for some reason that I somehow need to get to. And it's sort of like a board game, like chutes and ladders or something. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to get there, but it's my destination, and I head for it. I had the last line of James Land, for example, before I think I had the whole first chapter.
Hmm. Interesting. That's really kind of interesting. I mean, I hear of mystery writers a lot that have sort of the ending because they need to know where they're going before they begin. But I don't know if I've ever talked to a novelist who said they had the last line.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
interesting. I would think in a way it could help you get there, because especially with literary or mainstream fiction, where you're not dealing with, you know, a genre where there's a strict form, you know, where things have to happen at certain places, it's sometimes very difficult to reach the end, because the plot can either be soft or meander and be difficult.
I know. I have to have a basic sense of stages also, but and also kind of a great deal of faith, I think.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. And Bernadette, you have prior to the Dow Gal's Guide to Real Estate, you have Zen and the Art of Knitting and The Knitter's Gift.
Yes.
Talk about those. How did those books come about?
I had always been fascinated by the way that knitting as a handcraft had sort of worked in my life at a time when things were very chaotic and I needed some peace, and that it allowed me to gain access to a level of meditation and spiritual sense of wholeness that I was hungering for. And I used to joke around with my husband all the time that I should do workshops, you know, weekend workshops, teaching people how to knit and be, you know, peaceful at the same time. And at the end of it, they'd not only have some sort of, you know, spiritual awakening, but they'd also have a nice knitted garment to show for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just sort of a joke thing. And I think I wrote a little piece of it, what became the first chapter, about my discovering knitting when I was 20, living in Ireland. And this is at a time, you have to understand, that knitting was not hip and cool like it is now. It was an anathema. Nobody was knitting. And I came back from Ireland and was finishing my bachelor's degree, and I would be knitting in my English classes and sitting in the library with books propped open at the university knitting. And I was considered very strange. But I always felt there was something there that fed me creatively and spiritually and artistically, just on many levels. And I wanted to explore that. And so I put together a proposal with the delightful Bonnie Nadel, who Michelle mentioned earlier, who believed in the idea. And this was when I was first pitching the story idea. It was before knitting was taking off, but it was sort of on the cusp of it. And it took a while to convince a publisher to sort of take a chance on this idea, because, you know, really, they could only conceive of little old ladies somewhere knitting acrylic yarn, and not what would end up becoming this massive boom in creativity in urban areas with natural fibers and amazing designs and everywhere people knitting. But we did happen to sell it, and at that time, then the knitting boom took off, and the book has gone on to do very well.
I bet. Well, I must say that when my obsession with knitting began a little over a year ago, I found your book in a Michaels. It was sort of tucked in some kind of cubby with these pamphlets on crochet. I don't know how it got there, but I'm not a crocheting type of person, but I was knitting and I found this book, and especially the title Zen and the Art of Knitting was exactly, you know, it called me to pick it up and take it out and buy it. And And again, I love it for the stories and how you tie, you know, sort of a lot of personal stuff, personal stories into knitting.
Right. And that was the idea. I didn't, again, like the Dow Gals guide, I have no interest ever really in writing a how-to book in any medium. I mean, you know, how to do anything. That format doesn't intrigue me. But I'm very intrigued by how narrative can enhance lives. How, by learning how someone else did something, we gain knowledge on how we might do something similar or something different, and how those stories give us the courage to go forward in different areas. So I wanted to explore not only my own obsession with knitting, but that of other people. For instance, I would interview novelists. The delightful Tara Eisen, whom I adore, is one of the novelists I interviewed, and she uses knitting as a way to unravel the threads of plot when she gets all tied into a knot. She puts down what she's working on writing-wise and goes to knit for a while, and the you know, singleness of the strand she's working with helps unravel the knots that she's gathered together in her brain. And by the time she's done knitting, she comes back to work on the novel, and the answers are there. And I talked to filmmakers and different people who had used it to great effect in all different fields. I spoke to the people at the Harvard Mind-Body Health Institute, and they did research into what made people go into meditative states similar to like a transcendental meditation state. And they could follow the brain waves and breathing patterns and respiration and heart rate and all these things. And they found that when people knit, they also could engender that same effect. Now, that's something I had no idea about when I started the book. It was sort of a happy coincidence to find that information. But it confirmed for me what I had always felt. And when I would talk to the few knitters I knew back then, back before everyone was doing it, they felt similar things as well. And so it was a way of exploring, you know, how does this work and why does it work? And what did our grandmothers know that we've since forgotten and now since rediscovered?
Mm-hmm. And then The Knitter's Gift, how did that one come about?
That's an anthology of stories. In fact, Michelle is one of my contributors in that book. That's an anthology of stories that once Zen and the Art of Knitting took off as it did, the publishers approached me and wanted another book about knitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically said, I've said all I have to say about knitting. I don't have more stories. But people had been emailing me like crazy through my website to tell me their stories in response to having read my story. So that sort of spawned the idea, oh, I could gather other people's stories. So I put a call out to all the writers I knew and on websites where knitters gathered. So not all the stories are written by professional writers, but they're all well-crafted. They've all been edited, and they're very solid stories on the many ways that knitting have touched different people's lives. For instance, Michelle, our other guest here, is not a knitter, but she fell in love with a particular sweater and how that sweater spoke to her and how she became obsessed by this particular sweater. That's one of the stories in there. And she's, you know, not a knitter, is never going to become a knitter, I don't think. Yet that sort of story would fit. So the stories are not all just by knitters, but how people's lives have been touched or shaped by the knitted things that they've owned or been given.
Do you still knit?
I do.
I always wonder. I mean, I've been wondering about this because as I invest in yarn, and, as my stash grows and I'm buying containers for it so I can also look at it.
Yes.
I think, what if it disappears as quickly as it arrived, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, when I knit, the interesting thing is I'm less interested in what I create when it's all said and done. And the same is probably true about my writing, that I'm less interested in what the sweater looks like when it's done or the scarf looks like when it's done, as I'm interested in the process of doing it and the joy of each row of doing it or each chapter and the feel of the yarn in my hands and the sense of flow state that I get into when I do it. And so I think I do it for those reasons more than anything else, more than whatever I create.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You're listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. I'm with Bernadette Murphy and Michelle Honeyvan, and we are talking about a lot of things. their books, Zen and the Art of Knitting, Round Rock, James Land, and the book they co-wrote, The Dow Gals Guide to Real Estate, and so much more. And lastly, Bernadette, you're also a literary critic. You you write book reviews.
That's correct.
Among other things.
Yes.
How is that? I mean, you know, it seems like, you know, a lot of reviewers are writers, but sometimes it seems that writers fall on one side or the other. Either they're more critics than they are writers of their own stuff. Where are you with it?
I think I'm sort of right in the middle. I would like to think I'm right in the middle, that I feel that it's a great honor to be allowed to be a book critic, and that it's an opportunity for me to educate myself on how literary works are put together. And I approach it from that aspect. I'm more interested in what can I learn from reading this and in writing about this and then trying to analyze what worked or failed to work in this particular novel or short story or collection of essays or nonfiction narrative. What can I learn about how the craft of writing works, and how can I share that with other people so that their lives may be enriched, so that when they go out to shop and are looking for a book for a friend or for themselves, that they've got some idea on what's going to satiate the hunger that they come looking for. I remembered years ago when I would be so hungry looking for good books, back before I got very involved in the literary world, and I could go to the library and I could go to a bookstore and I could walk up and down the aisles, and I was very frustrated wondering, how will I know if I made the right pick? I could, you know, buy this book, it looks good now, and get it home and be very disappointed. And my budget at that time would only allow me to buy like one new book a month. So if I made a wrong choice, that was a big problem. And I want to be able to give my readers enough information so that hopefully they can go out and get the books they'd like to read and get a sense from what I write about them, whether it'll be enjoyable for them or not, whether it will meet what they're looking for.
Hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, I always wonder with reviews, you know, because some readers especially are very dependent on reviews and are going to buy or not buy a book because of the review. And it's a certain pressure, isn't it? I mean, for you as a reviewer?
Yeah, although the way I approach it is I'm giving one person's response to this book.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my response. Now, certain readers who have read my work for a while know whether my response is going to be in line with their response or not. Not everyone has the same taste. Not everyone has the same aesthetic. So I never make a claim that no one's going to like this book or everyone's going to love this book. That's not possible.
Right.
But I can share with my readers what moved me about this, why the language was so beautiful in this particular book, or why things fell flat. And that may give them information so that they can go forward and make the choices that will best fit them. But it is only one person's response to the work. It can't be anything bigger than that because I am just one person.
Sure. Interesting. We have a few minutes left on Writers on Writing with Bernadette Murphy and Michelle Honeyman. We've been talking about the Dow Gal's Guide to Real Estate and their own work. And you both either currently teach or have taught. I think, Bernadette, you're currently teaching.
That's correct, yeah.
And Michelle, right now you're not teaching?
Right now. No, I'm not teaching right now.
Will you both talk about how teaching affects your writing? And are you able to, you know, separate from the teaching and make time for yourself and get out of, I mean, how do you get away from, I guess, your students' work and sort of find your own kind of writing space?
Well, actually, I find that teaching enriches one's writing largely because of collegiality. I've met students. Bernadette was my student, and I've met students who've become lifelong friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met, when I've been affiliated with an institution, I've had colleagues that, you know, have really helped me or inspired me and have continued to be a friend. And I think that that's the thing about teaching and taking literature classes, is that you're not alone all the time with that, you know, blank computer screen in your office. You're actually disseminating ideas and, you know, absorbing ideas, and it's very stimulating. So I don't find it, you know, people say, oh, can you teach and write at the same time? Sometimes there are time constraints, and sometimes the dissemination of ideas doesn't yield something immediately, but it, you know, it certainly seeds the imagination, and you never know what's going to come out of it, what's going to come out of a particular class, what you're going to learn. I always think that, like Bernadette says, she learns through, she uses her reviews as a way to learn, and I always like the old adage, never teach something you don't need to learn yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it a learning situation all around.
Yeah. How about you, Bernadette?
I agree completely, and I love the sense of excitement about literature when you walk into a classroom with students who are hungry to talk about words on a page. You know, in the real world, a lot of people I pass on my daily basis are not interested in talking about these things with me. And so to get together with people who are equally passionate to discuss, is this the correct word in this phrase? And how did you take this ending? Did you interpret it this way or that way? You know, getting people together who want to talk about how these little glyphs on a page create whole worlds in our minds and sway us emotionally and get us excited or depressed or concerned or, you know, all the amazing things that writing does. To be together with a group of students who are hungry to know this, who are hungry to explore it with me, I find it very exciting.
Yeah. I love watching, especially with adults, watching their growth as writers and how, you know, certain students come in and they don't think they have anything to say. And you just watch them bloom,
yeah.
And I find that just so gratifying, really,
yeah.
to be a part of that process.
Yes, yeah.
Also, I have to add that there's nothing in the world more fun than talking about literature,
mm-hmm.
And there's an occasion for it in the classroom.
Yes. We're at the end of our time. I wonder if each of you have some words of wisdom for the writers who are listening, who maybe struggling through a project or approaching agents and dealing with rejections or journals, sending out stories and dealing with that.
The best advice I was ever given was, and it was given to many people, was from the fabulous writer Grace Paley. And it's not so much how to do anything, but sort of a way to approach being a writer, and her advice was keep your overhead low. And if you can do that, you get all the choices in the world you want. And if that has been just stellar advice for me for many years.
Mm-hmm. Michelle?
Well, I would say that the advice that I would offer comes from the Tao Te Ching, and it is to weaken your ambition and strengthen your resolve. Forget about who's going to publish you. Forget about the big advance you might or might not get. And just do the work and then see what happens.
Mm. Yeah, that, you know, get caught up in the process, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Not the product.
Yeah.
Tell us again where you're going to be tonight and website addresses.
We're going to be at Vroman's in Pasadena. And I have an address here, 695 East Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena. And our website, which is just coming online, so there's a couple of sections still missing, is thedaogals.com, TAOGALS.com. You can email both Michelle and I through that. There's a link to each of us individually and lots of information about the book.
Mm. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barbara, for having us.
Thank you, Barbara. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Bernadette Murphy and Michelle Honeyvan talking from Los Angeles, and their new book, brand new book, is The Tao Gal's Guide to Real Estate, Six Modern Women Discover the Ancient Art of Finding, Owning, and Making a Home, published by Bloomsbury. Gosh, we are at the end of our time again, aren't we? If you want to know more about this show, you can go to penonfire.com and click on the radio tower. It will take you to the radio page. And there you can also listen to podcasts and archive shows. You'll also see who's coming up on the show. And if you want to be on a weekly email list, email me at penonfire@earthlink.net. I am going to leave you now with a quote from from their book. And it goes like this: chase after money and security and your heart will never unclench. Ain't that the truth? It's been great having you here. Thanks for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM, broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Until next time.
Cry, girl.